If the conduct of the men had been alarming in the boat, it became truly threatening when they had come aboard. They lay about the deck, growling together in talk. The slightest order was received with a black look, and grudgingly and carelessly obeyed. Even the honest hands must have caught the infection, for there was not one man aboard to mend another. Mutiny, it was plain, hung over us like a thundercloud. And it was not only we of the cabin party who perceived the danger. Long John was hard at work, going from group to group, spending himself in good advice, and as for example, no man could have shown better. He fairly outstripped himself in willingness and civility. He was all smiles to everyone. If an order were given, John would be on his crutch in an instant, with the cheeriest, "Aye, aye, sir," in the world, and when there was nothing else to do, he kept up one song after another, as if to conceal the discontent of the rest. Of all the gloomy features of that gloomy afternoon, this obvious anxiety on the part of Long John appeared the worst. We held a council in the cabin. "Sir," said the captain, "if I risk another order, the whole crew will mutiny, and we've only one man to rely on." "And who is that?" asked the squire. "Silver, sir," returned the captain. "He's as anxious as you and I to smother things up. This is a tiff. He'd soon talk them out of it if he had the chance, and what I propose to do is give him the chance. Let's allow the men an afternoon ashore. If they all go, why, we'll fight the ship. If they none of 'em go, well, then, we hold the cabin, and God defend the right. If some go, you mark my words, sir, Silver'll bring 'em aboard again as mild as lambs." It was so decided. Loaded pistols were served out to all the shore men. Hunter, Joyce, and Redruth were taken into our confidence, and received the news with less surprise and a better spirit than we had looked for. And then the captain went on deck and addressed the crew. "My lads," said he, "we've had a hot day, and are all tired and out of sorts. A turn ashore'll hurt nobody. The boats are still in the water, you can take the gigs, and as many as please can go ashore for the afternoon. I'll fire a gun half an hour before sundown." I believe the silly fellows must have thought they would break their shins over the treasure as soon as they were landed, for they all came out of their sulks in a moment, and gave a cheer that started the echo in a faraway hill, and sent the birds once more flying and squalling round the anchorage. The captain was too bright to be in the way. He whipped out of sight in a moment, leaving Silver to arrange the party, and I fancy it was as well he did so. Had he been on deck, he could no longer so much as have pretended not to understand the situation. It was as plain as day. Silver was the captain, and a mighty rebellious crew he had. The honest hands, and I was soon to see it proved that there were such on board, must have been very stupid fellows. Or, rather, I suppose the truth was this, that all hands were disaffected by the example of the ringleaders, only some more, some less, and a few, being good fellows in the main, could neither be led nor driven any further. It is one thing to be idle and skulk, and quite another to take a ship and murder a number of innocent men. At last, however, the party was made up. 6 fellows were to stay on board, and the remaining 13, including Silver, began to embark. Then it was there came into my head the first of the mad notions that contributed so much to save our lives. If 6 men were left by Silver, it was plain our party could not take and fight the ship, and since only 6 were left, it was equally plain that the cabin party had no present need of my assistance. It occurred to me at once to go ashore. In a jiffy I had slipped over the side and curled up in the foresheets of the nearest boat, and almost at the same moment she shoved off. No one took notice of me, only the bow oar saying, "Is that you, Jim? Keep your head down." But Silver, from the other boat, looked sharply over and called out to know if that were me, and from that moment I began to regret what I had done. The crews raced for the beach, but the boat I was in, having some start, and being at once the lighter and the better manned, shot far ahead of her consort, and the bow had struck among the shore-side trees, and I had caught a branch and swung myself out, and plunged into the nearest thicket, while Silver and the rest were still 100 yards behind. "Jim! Jim!" I heard him shouting. But you may suppose I paid no heed. Jumping, ducking, and breaking through, I ran till I could run no longer.